Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday following a very successful fun drive here on the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I want to thank everyone who donated to this program and everyone who donated to all of the other shows as well. Had some technical problems that first weekend. The station was off the air for a short time. They got all that going again, and we're back, got back into it, and overall had a very successful fun drive, I think. Thank you so much, everyone, for participating in that. I even had a donation from Hawaii, of all places. If you're still out there, if you're visiting, you're probably not hearing me. But if you listen all the time in Hawaii, aloha to you out there. Thank you very much for donating so very, very far away. And yet, having a good, healthy interest in the Kansas City theater scene over in Hawaii is a good thing, I think. Well, we're going to talk about some interesting things on the program today. Something that's not done anymore. Well, there is a theater in town called the Kansas City Repertory Theater. They do shows in, or they used to do shows in rotating rep. They don't so much anymore. But one of the local theaters is, and they're doing it in a classic rotating rep, actually by one act as well as by play. Here to explain all this to me, because Lord knows I need to be have things explained to me sometime, the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater is doing Orphan Cycle, and that involves all of this changing around with us. To tell us all about it, Todd Lanker is the Associate Artistic Director of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, located just up the street here, just a short walk. Did you walk?
We did.
Just a short walk up at the Warwick Theater, which is at 3927 Main. We, for instance, are 3901 Main, so it's a very short walk up the street. Todd Laker's with us, the Associate Artistic Director. He also plays the role of Horace.
Yes, I do.
The main character in the show. I think that's fair to say.
I think that it's probably fair. It's probably fair. I tend towards self-deprecating and minimizing, but I think it's probably fair to say.
Sure. Elaine Christensen is with us as well. She plays the role of Elizabeth, and, you know, they go chronologically through history. So, and you show up, I guess, in the second play.
I do. I show up in part two, in young Horace's young adult life, and I stay through the end.
Yeah. So it goes basically in chronological order. And you can see all of it on different nights.
Yes.
This is a difficult explanation, so be patient with us. We will explain how it's going to work for you.
Yes, so there are three individual parts of this story. The whole story is called The Orphan's Home Cycle. Part one is the story of a childhood. It deals with Horace as a 12-year-old and then as a very young adult. Part two is the story of marriage. And it deals with Horace in sort of his middle early adulthood. I stand by it. And part three is the story of a family, and it's Horace as he begins to get into his late 20s through sort of mid to late 30s as he starts to raise and explore what it means to have a family of his own. Each of the parts, and this is where it gets a little complicated, each of the parts is broken up into three acts, and each act is an independent story. So, for example, in part one, Story of a Childhood, the first act of part one is called Roots in a Parched Ground. It has a whole cast of characters. It has a beginning, middle, and end, its own plot, and its own kind of through line. Horace, in that case, is 12 years old. That play is set in 1902. The next act of part one is called Convicts, and it's set in 1904. The same actor is playing Horace, but he encounters an entirely different group of people within an entirely standalone story. So when all of these, what add up to nine individual acts or one-act plays, was written, it was written independently and as its own thing. And over the course of Horton Foote's career, he wrote these nine plays about Horace Robidoux. And then in 2009, with the help of Signature Theater Group and the Hartford Stage, compiled it into this cycle that could be performed in rep. So on any given night, we will be performing one of the three parts. We have a couple of festival days on Saturdays in which we'll perform two of the parts, enabling you to actually see, over the course of 2 days, all three parts, all nine one-act plays of the Orphan's Home cycle, and kind of make a whole weekend with Horace, his family.
The only thing I can think of, and I'm going back a ways, but you've probably heard the horror story, well, that's not fair. The stories about Nicholas Nickleby over
yes,
the rep.
Yes.
And how that went on and on and on.
And on and on. Yes. Yes. It does fall in line with those sort of epic pieces of theater, like the Peter Brook's Mahabharata and Nicholas Nickleby, and these kind of grand, larger-than-life stories that are told on a grand, larger-than-life scale.
Oh, yeah.
The Met's production of Kentucky Cycle a couple years ago would also fall in line with that, of these stories that are written to be too big for a single performance. It's not reasonable to perform them all at
sure.
once, but because of that, they're rarely performed, and this is actually only the second production of the entire Orphan's Home cycle.
That is correct.
Yeah, there
was this his intent, do you think, all along? Did he intend, of course, it started as a one-act play, which expanded to two, then three, and he says, well, this is working so well, why don't I go ahead and write a second play, same way? What do you think? Do you know anything about that?
I think that it's very likely, yeah, absolutely. The cycle is actually very loosely based on Horton Foote's father's story.
So I'm sure that when he sat down to write one part, you know, it sort of all just started spilling out of him, I think, as he started developing this plot line and all these individual plot lines within the overall story. But I think he was so invested in it that by the time that it was all done, you know, it was this grand epic journey that you get to follow Horace Robidoux on from his childhood all the way through his adult life. So I think that Horton Foote would probably have intended it to be seen from, you know, the very beginning, from Roots and a Parched Ground all the way through the last one act in the cycle, because you do see the whole story that way, and you get to follow the hero's journey all along.
And fun side fact, he was so in love with these, once he'd finished all of these nine, he was like, okay, I'm done. And then around the early 90s, he got to thinking about the character of Lilydale, which is Horace's sister, and her husband, who are in the play, and he wrote another play about Lilydale and her husband Will Kidder as adults, called The Young Man from Atlanta, which went on to win the Pulitzer Prize in 95. So we like to think, we're like, well, it's not really part of the cycle, but there are
but
10 plays. There's actually 10 plays that are all the same world that he loves to work in.
So why is Karen not doing the other one, too? Oh, no. I guess this is probably enough for now.
Yeah,
it's probably a director's nightmare, but I should ask Elizabeth first about her character and how she fits into the show.
Of course.
Her name is Elizabeth. What did I call you? Elaine is your name.
Yes.
Elizabeth is your character. So.
Correct. Yes, Elizabeth is the character. Elizabeth Vaughn, later to become Robidoux, shows up in part two of the cycle, and very early on in the relationship that develops between Horace and Elizabeth. And then they go on to get married. No spoilers there. But yes, she shows up halfway through the cycle and really gets to share a lot of the journey and the hardships that come to Horace through his young adult life. And I think that what's beautiful about their relationship is that Elizabeth sees the best in Horace, even though he's come from nothing, you know, but she sees in him the determination and the drive to constantly better his own life, and she loves that, and she falls in love with that, and really becomes a huge support for him as he continues to grow up and start his own family.
And very, very much also based on Horton Foote's mother.
Yes.
And it's wonderful to read the things that he says about his parents' relationship and what he values about it, because it all comes so through, just shining through in Elizabeth particularly, of what the two of them were individually and how they became together.
Yeah.
This relationship that he held as kind of the pinnacle of how marriage should be and how a supportive relationship should be.
Now, if I remember correctly, earlier on you slipped in there on me, has something to do with his father, Horton Foote's father?
Yes.
Yes, so Horton Foote wrote...
They both agree.
Yes.
We're in
agreement. So the cycle is loosely based on Horton Foote's own father and his mother and their relationship. So it's not completely biographical, but there are definite hints of his own family members in that, which is kind of fun to see, you know, and his then subsequently Horton Foote's view of all of these crazy family members that come in and out as well.
Semi-autobiographical things, even if it's a stretch.
Yes.
Because most of the time it's 90% fiction, only 10% reality.
Correct.
But it's much easier, in my opinion anyway, for the writer to focus in on that. They feel like they have a goal to reach and something to say that's of a familiar nature.
And based on my understanding, I would say the scale tips, I don't know what an accurate percentage would be, but tips much further away, because, you know, based on a true story is a pretty common phrase to mean there was a person who had this name once. But in as far as I can tell, there's a lot that really parallels, to the point that a proxy of young Horton Foote as a child shows up later, and everybody, you know, who knew him as a child is like, oh yeah, he wrote the child version of himself into his play. And then there's a lot of then little throwaway hints too of his great-grandfather was the lieutenant governor of Texas during the Mexican-American War, which is exactly the case for Mr. Foote as well.
Yeah, you're going back to the 1840s, probably.
Yeah.
As far back for that, we're speaking with two of the performers in the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater production of Orphan's Home Cycle. You have an idea now of why it's called what it's called and how it works. It opens on October the 27th and runs through November 18th at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater's new site, the historic Warwick Theater, 3927 Main. You could park behind the building. Parking on Main is difficult at any time of the day or not. Night. The radio station here is that we're at 3901 Main, for instance. The theater is at 3927 Main, so basically just half a block down the street from there.
Yeah.
But parking, you can get parking in the back. There's stores on Main. You can park in back for that. The number to call for more information, 816-569-3226, or online at metkc.org. And you really need to learn those, because attending might be a little confusing at times. So let's make it as simple for the folks as we can. I assume it starts out the first night, for instance, with the first play, and then the second night, the second play, and the third night, the third play, then rotates around and begins again. Is that basically what the run is?
More or less. Though the first weekend, we actually only open the first two plays.
Oh, I see.
So Saturday and Sunday, we'll do parts one and two, and then start again with part one on Thursday of the second week. And that's, we'll be introducing part three. And from that time forward, pretty much runs one, two, three.
Yeah, is that pretty much laid out at the website?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Because people, I guess the question they will ask is, now, just if I only can see one of the three, will that make sense?
It will, yes. Each one of these parts can stand alone. It's not like anyone will be completely lost coming into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you do get much more of the grand scope of things if you do see parts one, two, and three. You don't have to see them in order, but
yeah. 816-569-3226 or online at metkc.org. We're speaking with Todd Lanker and Elaine Christensen, two integral parts in the show, especially for Todd, although you don't play yourself as a 12-year-old. You come
best
in at about 20.
Yes, yes.
Well, Elaine has more room to wiggle.
I do,
right,
yes,
there.
Yes. Yeah. No 12-year-old versions of Elizabeth in this play.
How does this man change? Does he change once he goes off to what they then called the Great War 101 years ago?
Well, he actually does not go to the Great War. He is waylaid on the verge of going. He is waylaid by the 1918 Spanish flu outbreak, and by the time he recovers from that, armistice has been declared and the war is over.
He was lucky. Not that he got the great flu. That was very deadly.
Yeah, and very lucky to have survived that. It particularly hit the young adults, active young adults at that time, so lucky on a lot of counts, and I think. It's fun playing over the course of, the 26 years of this play, because everything is just backstory for another play.
Sure.
So there's so much of my work of kind of creating the life of this person that I don't have to I know what happened and where I'm starting this at because I just played that yesterday.
That's true. That's true. It has to be a directing nightmare. I assume you try your best. It would Karen and yourself as her assistant. I assume you try to rehearse in order. That may not always be possible. Is that difficult for the performers?
Can be, definitely. Just depending on what you are rehearsing that day, to jump back and forth in time can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. But the closer that we get to opening, things start going in order a little bit more, and you're like, oh, this makes sense. Okay.
I didn't do a proper introduction at first. Todd Lanker is also the associate artistic director of the Met. He plays the role of Horace. Horace as a adult man.
Horace as a grown-up, yes.
He has appeared also at the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, the Coterie, the Rep, and the Unicorn. Elaine Christensen, who plays the role of Elizabeth. She has been with Culture House. You've heard them on the show. They always do a big performance around February, January
or
February.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they often are on for that. Mm-hmm. Summit Theater out in Lee Summit and the University of Nebraska at Kearney for things as well. Did you ever do anything like this in college?
Never like this. No, this is something completely new for me, but it's been an amazing adventure, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, what is the biggest challenge, I guess, keeping everything straight in your mind as far as time period is concerned?
Probably. Trying to figure out what year it is sometimes, doing a little bit of math work, what month is it? What year is it?
Yeah, and then probably what you mentioned before. This is the other day, we were rehearsing the last piece of the series, the third play of the third part, and then we had a run-through of part two, we kind of got to this this time, 1928, and then we had to jump backwards about 16 years and kind of track all of that through, I would say switching from one thing to the next is and then going backwards.
Yeah, some of your fellow cast members, now obviously it's not the same people through the whole cycle. It can't be.
No, and we do have a lot of double casting and a lot of people playing multiple parts throughout Horace's life.
Yes, yeah.
But with some of the other actors, Robert Gibby Brand is Kansas
Bob
City
is
classic.
So, Bob is so good.
What a wonderful.
Bob probably told you all about that era in history.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Full of information about it.
He's really good.
As he always is. He's wonderful. He's wonderful. And
he is.
Shelley Weish, Sherry Roulette Mosley is with us as well. Coleman Crenshaw, Cody Proctor, Annie Schwaner,
Andy Penn.
There's so many that I apologize in advance to everybody that I'm not mentioning because there are so many.
I'll bet.
Wendy Thompson, Kathy Breeden. Everybody. Lauren Hamilton. Emmerich.
Tell me about the young man who plays your younger self.
Yes, Creighton Smith-Alaire. Thank you for bringing up the younger version of me. Yeah, Creighton Smith-Alaire is an incredibly talented young actor. I believe he's worked at Met before. He's playing Horace in the first two acts of part one. as the play starts, as Horace's own father is on his deathbed. I actually play. just in the whole
So you're also
things.
The father.
I'm also,
yes.
I am my own father.
Interesting.
But yeah, so kind of dealing with, coping with that loss and then trying to find a place to exist and a way forward, which I think is unfathomable for us now, and even at the time was difficult, but definitely not unique. There's stories after stories of people who lost their parents at 12 and then had to get a job and had to go on, and that's the second act of part one is Horace's first job at 13, working in a store at a convict work farm.
Yeah. Well, overall, if you had to pin it down to maybe one theme, what would that be?
Oh, well, you don't ask for much, do you?
Well, I can amend it. I mean, you used the phrase earlier, a hero's journey.
Yeah, I would say across the cycle, I think it's a story of the difference between just existing and thriving.
Being able to overcome any circumstance, no matter how tragic or how hard it might be, the ability to thrive in that and to make the best of any situation.
And I know that's something that Horton Foote really respected about his father, is that because the play is also peopled with just kind of workaday people surviving, and that was not his father. He refused to just survive. There was a drive and in a fire that pushed him to refuse to accept bare existence.
Yeah, the show opens on October the 27th. We'll run through November 18th. And again, we've probably made it sound a little more confusing than we need to.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But, you know, there's three plays. There's nine acts. So there's three one-acts within each one play. But it's presented in a chronological order that would make it easy to follow. So you need to go to the website or call them. Probably the website would explain it better, which would break down what play and where it fits in the cycle on a particular on a particular evening or afternoon's performance. Are there matinees as well?
Yes,
as
there are. We've got Saturday matinees, not this weekend, but every weekend afterwards. Saturday matinees at 1:30 and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m.
Yeah. Now, Horton Foote, I suppose, like to write. It is said that A Trip to Bountiful, one of his other plays, is connected to his own family as well. So this is how his mind worked. That might help you, well, not you, help the audience to understand what is going on with that. Yeah. People like to hear other people's life stories, especially when they're so colorfully done, as is done in the case of Horton Foote and his plays. It's at the historic Warwick Theater right up the street from here. And once again, the number to call for more information, 816-569-3226 or online at metkc.org. I made a note here, parking behind the building. You'll drive down Main, and you'll see probably not many spaces available. But there is a large parking lot in the back, because there used to be a grocery store right on the corner at 40th and Main. So there's a parking lot in back, and there are other businesses that have probably closed by the time. The radio station, of course, is always on. Not much business at the bank then. So there's a long parking lot back there, plenty of room for you to park. When you see the orphan's home cycle, and I guess we're talking about Horace's home cycle when we talk about that.
Yeah, it's comes from a poem that I'm going to forget the author of, but that the world is an orphan's home is where that title comes from.
Sure. Now, where do you go from here? You're preparing another play, I guess, for the Mets?
Yes. Coming up in January, I'll be directing the Mets production of, pardon me, of Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard.
Oh, yes, Chekhov.
Good old Chekhov.
It all comes together. Horton Foote's been described as the American Chekhov or the Chekhov of the Plains. So we'll be leaping into something similar, but very different.
Sure. Chekhov is difficult to do. You have a daunting task ahead of you for that. Oh,
thank you.
He thanks me as it started. Elaine, where from here?
We will see. I am on a grand adventure here in Kansas City. So I just arrived.
You just arrived.
I just arrived.
Take in some barbecue.
Exactly.
Football.
Amen to that.
Lots and plenty of theater.
Oh yes,
in the
absolutely.
Area as well. So audition for all of them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you'll get some. You won't get some, but such is the actor's life.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
Thanks so much for being with us. Todd Lanker, the Associate Artistic Director over at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. He has the task of playing a Horace in Robidoux in all three of these plays. Not every single one act,
yes.
But every play in that. And Elaine Christensen, who plays the role of Elizabeth, who becomes his wife.
Correct.
And she's in, two and three?
Parts two and three from one act number 5 through 9.
So you probably feel lucky at this point.
A little bit, I do.
At first you probably thought, oh, I wish I could have been cast in all of them. Then when you saw what it was going to be like, you said, yeah, this is fine.
This is fine, exactly. This is fine. I get one night off at least.
Thanks so much for being with us. MetKC.org, 816-569-3226 to see the entire Orphan Cycle, all 9 1 acts, all three plays at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, now located at the historic Warwick Theater, 3927 Main. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Michael.
We're going to take a brief break. Then when we return, our friends from the Unicorn Theater will join us. They're going to talk about Sweat. Oh, yes. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. We're going to travel. We just went up the street about half a block to the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater at the Warwick. Now we're going to go the other way. We're going to go north down the street, still about half a block, to the Unicorn Theater, where they are presenting Sweat. Not in running repertory. It stands all by itself with us to tell us about that production. Three of the performers in the show. Jan Rogge is with us. She plays the role of Tracy. She has performed with, I can't say them all without breathing. So the Unicorn Theater. She is a core artistic member of the Kansas City Actors Theater, where she has both acted and directed. And she and one of her fellow actresses kind of traded off. One directed the other.
Cinnamon
Schultz. It makes for a fine byplay. There, yeah. I thought very, very interesting as well. Many appearances also at the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. Do you dream Shakespeare at night?
Yes. Only in the summertime.
Only in the summertime. Also performed at Spinning Tree Theater, the New Theater, the Milwaukee Chamber Theater. That explains the Green Bay connection. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival, Cornell University, others as well, but I skipped to the Old Globe Theater, which must have been a fantastic experience to perform over there.
Yeah,
for a Shakespeare person like yourself.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Beautiful weather.
Yeah, she plays the role of Tracy in the show. Matthew J. Lindblom.
That's exactly right. Great job.
Plays the role of Jason. Just we hear little things, you know. Just back from L.A., where you had an adventure.
Yes, that's right. Well, I still live there. I'm just back here for the show, and I'll go back afterwards.
Yeah, get a little closer to the mic so they can hear the wonderfully deep voice of yours.
There we are.
Has appeared at the Kansas City Repertory Theater, the Living Room, and the Coterie as well. So welcome to the show. I don't think I've had you on before.
I've never been on before.
Okay, well, you have now. Kenny Trice is with us as well.
Hello.
He plays the role of Chris. He's previously been seen at the Unicorn, Kansas City Actors Theater, the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, the Coterie, the Black Repertory
Black
Theater.
Repertory
Kansas,
Theater
which
yeah.
show were you in?
I was in The African Company Presents Richard III. That was their very first production in connection with the Shakespeare Festival.
Oh, yeah. Shakespeare really
Sid
has a connection.
Sid directed it, yes.
Between all of you, that that has a nice connection there.
Yeah, definitely.
All of your repertory theater there. The Ozark Actors Theater.
Yeah.
Where is that located?
That's in Rolla, Missouri.
Oh, okay. So, that's in the Boot Heel.
In the Boot Heel. Like, it's one of the one equity theater out there.
Wow.
They put on a full summer of shows, and they house you. Like, the patrons will volunteer to house the actors, and...
That's an old-fashioned way
of
doing it.
It is.
Kind of
it's summer stock
of
at its finest.
Have any of you done Arrow Rock?
I haven't done Arrow Rock, no.
Yeah. Well, it's very similar, I think. They say the same. The performers I know who have performed there.
Can I mention about the casting? Cynthia Levin,
yes, you can.
And Ian, you know, the artistic director of The Unicorn, she cast this beautifully, and it really is on the casting. And two of these gentlemen don't live here anymore. Matt's out in L.A., and Teddy, just tell him what you were doing.
Yeah, I just came back from Australia. I was on I did a 2-year run of the Book of Mormon out there.
Really?
Yeah, it was their first time out in Australia, so I started the company there in Melbourne for a year.
Is Mormonism popular in Australia? I have no idea.
It is, actually. Like, I ran into a few while I was there, and then I've seen quite a few on the street. And I actually ran into one who asked me, like, oh, what are you doing here? Like, where are you working? And I was very reluctant to tell them what I was doing. but they were good sports about it, because they all know about the show. It's massive.
Well, we should talk about sweat. I might have more for you later.
Oh, okay.
Towards
right.
the end
no
about
worries.
Working in Australia. I've heard things.
Yeah, it was great to see what it was like, but also, you know, you see another side of it that we're all like trying to build as theater artists and get more people involved in the theater. And
yeah, let's talk about Sweat. It opens in previews on the 17th. It's already open.
Yeah, it goes till November 11th.
It's officially opened on the 20th. Runs through November the 11th at the Unicorn Theater, 3828 Main. So on the other side of the street, but just down the street. So many theaters in such a
it
close
is,
area.
But they've been there for what, 45 years?
Yes, so maybe longer.
The classic.
UnicornTheater.org, you can inquire there, or you can dial on your phone. Of course, no one dials anymore, they punch you. 816-531-PLAY, and that translates to 7529, extension 10. For more information about Sweat, which is kind of a contemporary theme, really, people worrying about their jobs disappearing.
It's very much, it's a very naturalistic realism, kind of ode to Clifford Odets. Back when he would talk about worker strikes and the real people, and it is about race, it's about losing your jobs and in the and the racial tension that happens in there, but it's also too about the big picture of there's no villains, there's no heroes in it, the loss of industry and the changing dynamic of the ethnic components that are happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have friendships. You've got the two young boys here that are friends, and we're all happy. It starts off, and it's set in a bar, a great bar, that Gene Friedman designed. It's wonderful. And then two sets of friends. I play the mother of one of the sons, and Cecilia Anania plays the other friend. And what happens when you start the fear of losing the jobs,
sure,
and what happens of that. But it's a very realistic, in-your-face, tough-as-hell kind of show.
Absolutely. And it's kind of going back to the year 2000 and in the 90s and early 2000s when Northern...
the Rust Belt.
The sort of Rust Belt started to deindustrialize and the unions started to fall apart, and what impact that had on drug abuse, racial tensions, and friendships.
Yeah, can you share your mic with Matthew over there? He's still, that mic is still a little low. Pull that one up. And let's where you both can use it, that we could hear it. What you said was very interesting, how the dichotomy changes.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, it's sad in a way when you lose industry like that. It's still closer. and that will be fun.
And it's how people react to it, mm-hmm. and how some people don't react to it. And Redding, the playwright, Lynn Nottage, lived here for 2 years. And she got the pulse of the city. She got to hear the voices of the people. And it was one of the poorest towns. I didn't know that. 40% poverty. And you can see that in Flint, Michigan, and other places
sure.
that have gotten. And it's... I was just saying, I'm from Milwaukee, and that was happening even in the 70s with the breweries and union workers getting locked out, and it hit everybody. So it was devastating. But, you know, it's interesting. Again, there's politicians at fault or whatever. It kind of goes both ways. But even after World War II, what happened is they all got bombed. We didn't. So we didn't have to redo our industry at all. They got brand new facilities.
Sure.
So, yeah, why not make things in Japan? Why not make things? Because they have brand new. And we had the old dinosaurs. That was another aspect to it, too. Making TVs, making stuff like that.
They have to find a way to bring that back. But there's also environmental concerns. You read mm-hmm. that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, God.
Yeah,
well, I won't mention names, but yeah, where they close down and you have half the community have cancer.
Uh-huh.
And then they discover that later. So, yeah, sure. There's reasons for regulations.
How does this affect the guys who work there?
Yeah. Well, I play Chris, and I've been working in the factory along with my mom, and my dad's also in the he works at a textile mill, and we find out that my father's been locked out of his plant for an extended period of time, and he's mm-hmm. started to take a downward turn because of his unemployment, and which then affects his role as a father, as a husband, and then, you know, and I see that, and I have goals to be an educator, and then you've got the conflict between, do you leave steady work at the factory where your family has always worked and this is what you do, or do you branch off and reach for something greater, and so I think that's where his conflict lies. And then I won't ruin anything, but there's an event that happens that then alters the course of that, mm-hmm. and so we see how fleeting those things can be, and we talk about it frequently about the American dream of. You do everything you can in order to achieve those things, but for some reason, it still doesn't work out.
Well, see, my father was a steel worker.
Oh.
I mean, they did maintenance on the vehicles, the trains. In mm-hmm. my father's case, they worked mm-hmm. in the local shop. So they worked on the trains that would come through the plant and mm-hmm. load the steel. You know, what I started noticing as I was growing up is once some of these men would retire, they didn't live very long after they
right.
retired. The longer they could stay and hold on, the longer their lifespan tended to be. Mm-hmm. I realize that's part psychological, part environmental, and some other reasons too. But it's a struggle
Absolutely.
That they have to go through.
A lot of those factory jobs are very physical. And you're doing the mm-hmm. same thing all the time. The tendonitis and all that stuff comes mm-hmm. into play. It's very real.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Matthew, how does your character cope with all of this? Yeah, bring it closer to me.
Well, it's so... Lynn Nottage's writing is phenomenally layered and complex in this play. So it's set in 2008 where you find Teddy and I's characters, Chris and Jason, in a... certain type of position, and you find out why that happens during flashbacks or just going back to the year 2000, and there's this theme going on throughout the play of generational trauma being passed down and how each generation copes with that in their own way.
my character, Jason, does not end up dealing with it quite well. He sort of goes down a dark trail, sort of like Teddy's or Chris's dad, Brucey, did.
Well, we all handle disasters in our lives. And I'm going to say disasters because if it happens to you, it's your disaster.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
Really is.
I mean, we all have our things, right?
We all have our things. And people cope with it in different ways. Is there a difference between now you were friends and you worked together? What was the difference there? Or am I giving away something in the plot line you don't want?
Difference in what sense?
Oh, of how you handle it.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. I think I have a much more optimistic view.
Well, that's good.
Of things, the character does. He's one of the few characters that sees outside of the city, outside of Reading, outside of just what's right in front of him. And I think that's what he latches onto. And I think when he's faced with the adversity, that's the glimmer of light that is the tether between like falling in the same circumstance and making a new life for uh-huh. himself, and then having to realize that if things don't go according to plan, then now you have to face a new reality and then move on from there.
Yeah,
he's really able to see beyond, which a lot of these characters can't. Tracy's a force to be reckoned with, but as soon as she hears that she's going to be going on strike, she really believes that she can't get another job. I mean, that's how fragile, through all of her toughness, uh-huh. that she really can't have anything else. So this entitlement, her dad worked at the union, her son works at the union. Like you have ownership over it, and it's very, very fragile. But there's a lot of brutality in the show, and somehow the Greg Buttel, who plays the bartender, is kind of like the neutral zone, the Switzerland. But he has this great line of, through all of the chaos and mess, human decency is at the core of everything. And I think sometimes we lose that, corporations lose that. Businesses, that these are real people.
Yeah, everybody is scared of their piece of the pie.
Everyone's scared, and boy, it can be a jungle, and not the best comes out of some people, and for some people, the best does come out.
That's the other thing, is that when things start to deteriorate around you, everyone gets into survival mode, and it doesn't matter who it is. All things are off limits. Everything is on the table,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter who you affect or how that affects yourself. You're just trying to survive, and that affects all the people around you.
It's a really exciting play. It's 9 characters. That's a lot.
Uh-huh.
Do you mind if I just mention their names real fast?
Sure.
Ian Crawford directed it brilliantly, and it is Louis Morrow, Keenan Ramos, Greg Buttel, Justin Barron, Cecilia Anania, and Vanessa Davis. And it is just a perfect cast. I think this is a show that could go really wrong, not work, if you didn't have.
Sure.
And I really applaud them for casting it well, because it's an exciting, dynamic, pulsating show.
I suppose the bar where it all takes place, that's a place where people come and talk about their feelings, as it were.
That's right. And growing up in Milwaukee, too, there were bars on every corner.
Well,
and kids would go there. I mean, I went with my dad all the time, because that is where not only you drink, but, you're on, there were all these games all the time, you know, darts, and it just went on and on, and you'd meet there for softball. It was. It's really amazing, and this is not a blue collar town. I wouldn't say that, and there aren't that many bars. I noticed that right away.
Jen was out in search of bars. Yeah. She really didn't find that many to her liking.
But it really is kind of. It really is it's the central part of it. That's where they meet. That's where they celebrate. That's where they play hard. They work hard, and it shows.
Did the playwright leave us with any hints of possible solutions, or did she not go that direction? Really? No, guys.
I think it says again. There aren't villains or heroes. I think with the craziness of the political scene that we have now.
I don't know. Do you rehab the industry? Do you retrain the workers? There's several different ways to go with it. Does she present any solutions?
Well,
she spent so much time there.
Yeah.
No.
I think there is. You have to adapt. I mean, I think. No, I don't think she really has an answer to it because it's multifaceted.
Sure.
And she doesn't give any clues onto what she thinks is best for the industries or how they should go or how we should get back to a nation that makes things. But I think she was more interested in the human issues. What is absolutely timeless for people? What we all go through and how we fundamentally deal with things and what is important at the end of the day. So I think there are things that she presents of how to move on from something that has devastated you, changed your entire life, and flipped everything upside down.
Sure.
She gives a voice to that have not been voiced. You know, I don't think so. And it is multifaceted and racially charged. My dad worked at the union, and when my dad worked there, they probably didn't have many African Americans. They don't, you know, nobody wants to share the piece of the pie. So she has this ownership over it, where my girlfriend, Cynthia, her father didn't work there, you know. So there's a difference. There was a big push in 2000s during this time of Hispanics moving in because they would work for less wages. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the scabs, you've got that tension, they're moving in, and the changing forces of the ethnic component is she voices that a lot through Teddy, through his character Chris, and through the dad, and even through Cynthia's, and Justin Baron, who plays Oscar, who Tracy thinks is, you know, Mexican or Puerto Rican or one of those, and he's actually from Colombia, who was born here, but he gets attacked a lot, in his own way.
Just because of what he appears to be.
Yeah, what he appears to be.
Necessarily what he
actually
is.
Actually, he's invisible. He's like a busboy, and nobody notices him until.
Well, that's a concern.
And so it's interesting.
Speaking of that, there is this really wonderful, not wonderful reality, but it is a reality that Lynn captures in a wonderful way about subtle racism. And also how that is passed down from generation to generation. Jan plays my mother, and her and I are on the racist end of the spectrum. And if it is a spectrum, I don't know. That's a ridiculous statement. Ridiculous. But also how that affects me and how that affects my relationship with my best friend Chris, who is African American, and
it's a multifaceted problem, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in regards to what you were saying about the solution aspect, and I think Jan hit on it in regards to giving these people a voice. One of the fascinating parts of Lynn Nottage's research was. I listened to an interview, and she said that she had got an email from a friend of hers that was talking about how the work industry has affected her and treated her, which then got her on this new track, and She went to Reading. It was only supposed to be a 2.5 week project, and it ended up being 2 years.
Yeah, sure.
2.5 years. And there's just an outpouring of stories, and she wanted to make these people who didn't seem visible, visible.
They did do something really cool, though. The Public Theater, they did it in New York City. Mm-hmm. They did a 30-day tour of 18 cities in the Rust Belt, up in Wisconsin, up in Michigan. They did it at Union Spaces. They did it at food pantries. They did it at church basements. And it was up close and personal. And they just finished the tour.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Like, a lot to learn.
Hear about it. Yeah.
Learning about other cultures, and even within our own country, there's many different cultures. And that's something that we all need to adjust to in our own ways. It opens. Well, it's already opened. Has the audience been affected by it so far?
Oh, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I would imagine. Very contemporary in many ways as well.
Yeah.
It's a problem that's still going on.
Yeah, it really is a hit in your face. You watch it, and I wish I could watch it now.
Well, there's always videotape. You know?
Yeah, can I mention to you on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at the Unicorn, they do something brilliant, and they have Pay What You Can.
Oh, okay.
At 7:30.
All right. The show runs through November the 11th at unicorntheater.org or by phone 816-531-PLAY. Easiest number to remember. That translates to 7529, extension 10, to see Sweat. So you'll sweat along with the performers, probably, in Sweat, running through November the 11th. I want to thank my guests for being with me. Jen Rogge, who plays the role of Tracy. She's appeared at... Where are you going to next? Probably something at Actors Theater again?
Yeah. Can't divulge it.
Can't divulge it. Okay. They always tell me that. Word always slips out. What about Matthew?
After this, I'm going home. Going home back to L.A.
Back to L.A.? What, you going to audition for any pilots? It's not pilot season.
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm
going
to stumble along, stumble into some project, and have fun with that, and maybe you'll see it, maybe you won't.
Okay. Well, I hope so. And Teddy?
Yeah, after this, I've got a little something on the horizon, but also keeping it a bit under wraps at the moment.
So many secrets going on. Jen Rogge, Matthew J. LeBlanc, and Teddy Trice in the Unicorn Theater production of Sweat, running through November the 11th, unicorntheater.org, 816-531-PLAY. Thanks so much, all of you. For being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
The jazz insider Sam Wiseman is with us. And guess what? He's going to play jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3, and then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.